Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this 1st of May. It is a Tuesday. Good morning. It's May Day. May Day. May Day. Good morning. Welcome to the program. It's very nice to have you with us on this day. And let me introduce our panel to you. 13 minutes past 9 o'clock. You all right there, Ray? I've got Ray Graff, our intrepid newsman, is on walking on furniture, trying to do some lighting adjustments in the studio. So I think everything's going fine. I think we'll be okay.
How many news people does it take to change a light bulb?
There you go. Let me introduce the panel to you. Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm trying to be okay.
Anything I can do to help in that, let me know.
No.
Okay.
Right. Thank you, though. You're very kind.
Thank you. J.P. Miller is with us. He is from the Empire Report, joins us every Tuesday. Good morning.
Good morning, Joe. Thank you for having me.
Chris Churchill is here. He is, now normally Mike Spain from the Times Union would be with us. Mike is on vacay, so Chris Churchill is filling in, and we thank you very much for being with us.
No, thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you
with
us.
It's always great when Chris is here.
We love when Chris is here.
You know, because he's a bit of a curmudgeon.
I'm too young to be a curmudgeon.
Yes.
Just now you're cantankerous?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Teresa Bourgeois joins us this morning as well, communications consultant. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. It's a lovely, warm day. We're going to have a warm day.
Yeah, it's a nice day, so we'll take it. All right, let's move on to stuff and talk about what's going on in the world. Now, just a reminder that you can join us, and we would love to hear what's on your mind by going to panel@wamc.org. Okay, so the New York Times yesterday printed a very interesting article / list of questions that Special Counsel Mueller has for Donald Trump in the broad quest on Russia ties and obstruction. Okay, so what does this mean? Well, what this means from the beginning, the understanding here, is that the special counsel who is investigating Russia's election interference has at least 4 dozen questions and an exhaustive array of subjects that he wants to ask President Trump to learn more about his ties to Russia and determine whether whether he obstructed the inquiry itself, according to a list of questions obtained by the New York Times. We'll go over the questions in a moment. The open-ended queries appear to be an attempt to penetrate the president's thinking, to get at the motivation behind some of his most combative Twitter posts, and to examine his relationship with his family and his closest advisors. They deal chiefly with the president's high-profile firings of the FBI director and his first national security advisor, his treatment of Attorney General Jeff Sessions, and a 2016 Trump Tower meeting between campaign officials and Russians offering dirt on Hillary Clinton. But they also touch on the president's businesses. Any discussions with his personal lawyer, longtime personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, about a Moscow real estate deal, whether the president knew of any attempt by Mr. Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, to set up a back channel to Russia during the transition, any contacts he had with Roger Stone, a longtime advisor who claimed to have inside information about Democratic email hackings, and what happened during Mr. Trump's 2013 trip to Moscow for the Miss Universe pageant. All right, so a lot there. I'm going to begin, Alan, with this question. Is this good that the New York Times published this list?
I don't think so. And in fact, I was just sitting here thinking that what was really going on is that the first question we want to ask is who leaked it? Now, we know that with Mueller's history of, you know, severe recalcitrance to let anything out, that it had to be the folks around Trump. So they get it, they leak it. And why? Well, it may just be that this provides the excuse to fire him. You know, this is clear that he's out to get me, and therefore we can't have that with the president of the United States. And I think that that may be the theory here. Now, that is coupled, of course, with Rudy Giuliani coming on, who I've recently, or I've always thought of as Jim Carrey in The Mask. He is coming on, and he is now the lawyer. And, you know, I wouldn't put it past him to put that stuff out there.
So if the five of us were to go into a room for, let's say...
A rabbi, a priest, and a...
Let's say 90 minutes, perhaps. Yeah. And we were going to come up with a list of questions for the president just on what we know about the investigation. Wouldn't it be very similar to this list of questions?
Absolutely. Plus, when he had the Russian ambassador and the other guy, the picture is in the White House in the Oval Office with him and those other guys smiling as if they had just eaten, you know, a good meal. I'm thinking that would be a question I would ask also. But yes, you're absolutely right.
I know the list kind of reads as a recap of the latter part of the election, or even before that. It looks like a recap of the entire Trump era. You know, there's every controversy you can think of is in there at some point or another. It's a little history lesson.
As we said, it's open-ended questions. What did you think and do regarding the recusal of Mr. Sessions? What did you make of the Lester? Why did you say what you said to Lester Holt? What is the reason for your continued criticism of Mr. Comey and his former deputy, Andrew McCabe? What was the purpose of the September and October 2017 statements, including tweets regarding an investigation of Mr. Comey. I think it's very interesting that you would ask the president what was the purpose of your tweets.
Yeah, you can see President Trump's lawyer saying to him, okay, when he asks you this question, here's the one-line answer you should give, and this will keep you out of harm's way. And his lawyers clearly think that he is going to be not good when he's being interviewed by Mueller. He's going to
talk too much. Which we don't even know is going to happen, right?
Well, I think everybody expects it. I think Trump wants to do it, and I think Mueller wants to do it. So why would it not happen?
Well, because people lie. So when Trump says he wants to do it, he's been known to tell big old fibs.
I think that could be a reason behind the leak, though. Too is just put this out there in cable where Trump is going to be watching and let him see the reaction, and maybe he'll see, it'll get into his head that he going in there and answering these questions is not
such
a great idea.
So who would be the leaker?
Oh, I think the White House is definitely the leaker.
Sure.
Yeah. I think it's maybe his attorneys.
But again, I mean, it can't be. It's a story, and yet, is there really anything here that we, as far as the questions go, it doesn't lead us into any other avenue that we weren't already thinking we were going down?
Remember, Joe, there's always a follow-up.
Right.
So you ask the question, he gives an answer, and then there's a follow-up. Teresa,
and then where were you on the night of September 15th?
I think they're newsworthy in that they show that collusion is still alive in Mueller's head. It's a lot of the questions are about obstruction of justice, but there are some collusion. There are some Russian business stories or questions, too. So, it's a lot of people thought that the collusion part, he had moved past that and was focusing mostly on obstruction of justice.
And then what was the tweet he had this morning, Teresa, regarding collusion?
He says it would seem very hard to obstruct justice for a crime that never happened. Witch hunt.
All right.
Exclamation point
exclamation
at the end of.
Point.
Okay. So is there a sad?
There are two exclamations. Two exclamation points. No sad face.
He doesn't use emojis.
No, I meant sad written out.
No,
sad.
I know, but he
should
use
emojis.
It.
I know. He's missing a golden opportunity.
It's coming
there.
Soon.
Yeah.
So there's one other thing here, and that is the question of whether a sitting president can be indicted. There is a common sense of it that a sitting president can't be, which is ridiculous, it seems to me. I mean, you found a president with a gun in his hand, as he suggested on Fifth Avenue, having just killed somebody, you couldn't indict him? It's ridiculous.
Well, the New York Times, in their article that broke this yesterday, says, quote, a longstanding Justice Department legal finding says presidents cannot be charged with a crime while they are in office.
Well, it's ridiculous.
But they can be impeached, right? So
no, but the theory, right, Chris, is that you impeach them first, and then you try them criminally
or pardon them.
I think that understanding is a big problem, and I think if there's real crimes that have been committed here, you might find that this goes to the Supreme Court of the United States, and now we find those five Republican justices sitting up there, and we'll see what they're going to do.
But let us also just think of what is going to happen over the next. This all has moved very slow. We are here in the first day of May. We have midterm elections in November. If the midterms turn out to be what they are at this moment, at this snapshot expected to be, as far as a Democratic wave, then what does that mean? Because the timing of this then becomes very important, correct?
Yes, and it's certainly going to be a bad year for Republicans in the midterms. And yeah, the timing is when is the interview going to happen? Republicans keep pointing to the fact that Mueller has repeatedly said that the president is not the subject of a criminal investigation. But you read these questions and you say, well, those questions sound like it's for someone that's the subject of a criminal investigation.
Although you know, a lot of people, JP, say not yet. In other words, no. He's not yet the target.
Right.
He's a subject, not a target. Is that right?
And I do think, Joe, your point of there aren't any questions that have come out of left field here. There's no really new stuff. There's a lot of stuff that's been reported. And so I think people on the left will say, this is clear. He and his team colluded with Russia. People on the right will say, well, there's not really all that much there. And the question is, does Mueller come out with kind of a report of all the nefarious things that happened, but without a conclusion, right? Without a charge, and kind of say, here's what I found.
Kind of Comey-esque, if you will.
Yes, exactly.
All right.
But also we have to step back and realize that we don't know if these really are the Mueller's questions. We just know that that's what the New York Times has reported and that's what's been presented to them. We just know that these are a compilation of questions. And to your point, Joe, if anybody's sitting around put together, you know, if his lawyers, Trump's lawyers, sat around and put together a list of potential questions, this would probably be it too. And they're really categories of questions.
Right. And they are topic categories. I mean, they're essay questions on the exam that I think you could, you know, right? I mean, like blue book time.
And if Mueller is giving them to Trump's team, he's expecting them to be leaked. And so maybe he is holding back 10 or 15 or 20 questions of stuff that has not yet been revealed in the press.
And maybe the leak is also holding back a few questions, correct, too. I mean, it's impossible to know.
Yeah.
Because if they're collusion-type questions, why would they leak them? I think Alan has the most important question he raised is why, what is their strategy? You've got to assume the Mueller folks have not leaked to this point. Why would they leak these now? And so presumably it's a Trump team leak, either his lawyers or inside the White House, one of the two. What do they see as the purpose? Some were positing last night that keeping the conversation going is, in fact, helping them. And think about all the things that they didn't talk about last night on cable TV. You know, they didn't talk about the problems with the trade deals that they had to extend. They didn't talk about the mistake that they made on the Netanyahu statement. You know, they didn't have to talk about the China trade issues because this is, you know, they were just rehashing what we already know.
Yeah, they also didn't talk about how the South Korean president said that Trump deserves the Nobel Peace Prize for what he's done in North and South Korea.
And he was threading the needle, of course.
Right.
As we've said before.
Or the horrific situation in Afghanistan, which to me is just, you know, the journalists killed, children killed at a school, American soldiers killed. So on. So all of those things get overshadowed by a rehash of questions that we could all, you know.
We got a letter from Mike who said, an article in The Hill cites a former assistant to Mueller who says that grammatical errors prove that the leaked questions came from Trump. His theory is that there was a conversation between Mueller and the White House, and the White House took notes and expanded them into questions and then leaked them. He says that lawyers do not ask questions this way.
That's what on cable news last night, a number of the the retired prosecutors and such were saying, that this did not seem like, this seemed like more note-taking than...
Yeah, Michael Schmidt, the reporter who wrote the story, too, was on cable news last night, and he made it sound as if that was the case, that they were rewritten questions, that they had been delivered verbally and that somebody was taking notes, and then that's how the questions got to the New York Times.
So
it wasn't a list that Mueller submitted or anything like that.
It was just in the preliminary...
A conversation.
Yeah. Now, would this have been a conversation that Rudy Giuliani was a part of?
That's a good question. I mean, I guess that all depends on the timing, right? I don't know. I don't know that there's any indication when this conversation took place.
When he came in, that was his job, right? Just to sort of get the train moving.
Not only that, he said that was his job. So in other words, it wasn't that we assume it was his job. As soon as he said, Mueller's an old friend and I can go and I can talk to him.
There was some speculation among the cable chatter last night that it's in Trump's interest for this to keep going through the midterms. And that because it does energize his base because they think he's being attacked. And just like you saw him introduce the idea of impeachment when he spoke at the rally on Saturday night, that, you know, you've got to come out and vote for me so that they don't impeach.
Yeah, that strikes me as a dubious strategy, though, because it also mobilizes the Democratic base, doesn't it? I mean, it enhances this whole idea that this guy's a crook and that he won the election in an untoward way. And as JP was saying, it also steps on a lot of the president's own good news, you know, the Korean deal or low unemployment or all the various things that he could be talking about or Republicans could be talking about. Instead, you know, this is dominating the conversation.
Well, I think that they are trying to find something to talk about because they're they've realized they can't talk about the tax bill right now. The polling has showed that they can't do that. And it appears in the last few days that they're going to try to bring back the health care bill back to the floor, if for no reason than for rhetorical purposes pre-election. So they obviously are looking for something that works for them talking about in the campaign.
I still think there's a very good possibility Trump is going to fire him. And say this all proves he's out to get me. We can't have that. He's fired.
Well, let's talk when we come back. We'll talk about Rosenstein and what they're looking to do to him too, as far as the House conservatives and their draft. We have a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, JP Miller, Chris Churchill, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable into the panel discussion we have this morning. Alan Chartok, J.P. Miller, Chris Churchill, and Teresa Bourgeois on the panel this morning. Alan, you have some letters for us?
I do, Joe, and thanks for asking. Jamie says, Trump's Q&A. You're missing the point. Mueller knows that whatever the question, Trump will lie. If he lies about anything, it becomes obstruction of justice. That's why he gave the questions in advance. This way, his lies will be even bigger.
It's easier to trick him into a lie, though, if the questions aren't provided in advance. Right now, he can pretty much have a written, he can read what he wants to say verbatim.
And Chris, don't you think that in the negotiation as to whether Trump would show up would be that they had to have the questions in advance?
Mm-hmm. But as JP said, there will be follow-up questions, right? Yeah. So,
and then Linda says, question about the New York Times questions. What if Trump does answer the question and purges himself? What would be the next step in the process? Well, we've been talking about that, and we don't know whether or not he's going to just deliver a report or whether there will be people who are indicted or whether he'll be an unindicted co-conspirator, which is certainly possible. Who knows?
When the other thing I wanted to mention, as I alluded to before we went to the break, another part of this is Rod Rosenstein, who is – of course, when the Secretary of State recused himself, then Rosenstein, who's the Deputy Attorney General, was the one who named Mueller as the special counsel.
Right.
Now, conservative House allies of President Trump have drafted articles of impeachment against Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who oversees the ongoing special counsel probe, setting up a possible GOP showdown over the federal investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election. The document, which is obtained by the Washington Post, underscores the growing gap between congressional Republican leaders who have maintained for months that special counsel Robert Mueller should be allowed to proceed, and the rank-and-file GOP lawmakers who have repeatedly battled the Justice Department during the past year. The draft articles, which one of its authors called a last resort, would be unlikely to garner significant support in Congress, but the document could serve as a provocative political weapon for conservatives in their standoff with Mueller and the Justice Department. What do they have to gain in this?
Well, they're camp followers. That's what they are. These are people who will do anything to preserve Trump's integrity. And, you know, I think they're barking up the wrong tree. I think at this stage of the game, there is so much that is going on, including inexplicably the kerfuffle with John Kelly, the chief of staff, who reportedly calls him an idiot and other things and says that there's chaos.
And now Kelly has said that report is, quote, total BS.
I find it hard to believe anybody at some point or another doesn't call President Trump an idiot, right? It's like everybody. I imagine his kids, his wife, everybody. Chief of staff. There's not
his
there's,
dog.
There's no one. I want to see the person raise their hand to say they've never called him an idiot.
So which is worse, though, an effing moron or an idiot?
I don't know. It's
which would you rather be called? I guess I'd go with idiot.
But on the impeachment, I think this is an
and one of the person one person who said one of those things isn't working in the administration anymore, and the other one is sort of.
I think I can't imagine someone that's never called Donald Trump an idiot. I just can't imagine it. But this impeachment, I think, is an overreach for the Congress. It hasn't been done in over 100 years. They have subpoena power. They can hold them in contempt of Congress. But an impeachment threat is ridiculous, and it further calls into question their credibility on this issue on Rosenstein. And I think it's an ill-thought-up tactic.
Well, of course, when you say an impeachment hasn't happened in 100 years, we have had impeachments, including Bill Clinton.
Well, yeah. not of no someone conviction. Not other than the president.
Not a non-presidential.
Right.
I apologize.
They haven't done it for someone that's a quote-unquote staffer in over, I think I read it, over 130 years.
I apologize.
And that's because we give the president a lot of leeway on, you know, who to hire and who to fire. And, you know, that's why they're in that office, allegedly.
Yeah.
That's one way of putting it, Chris. Yeah. Yes, that's why they're in that office.
Well, you know,
allegedly.
Well, you know what happens here is that somebody gets a chance to be important by being in the White House, and they get there and they say, "I can handle Trump," and of course, then they find out that they can't handle Trump, and in fact, he likes to fire people and he likes to have dissonance around him because it's a bright, shiny object, as Teresa has said, you know, so many times, and it distracts people. So, you know, I'm thinking, unlike everybody else, I think that I've been hearing, that there should be an impeachment. I do. I think if you find information about this guy that is really damaging and you can prove it and Mueller comes out with it, I think it should lead to articles of impeachment, and I think they should proceed. It isn't the question of whether it's good politics. It's a question of what's appropriate.
It's also a question, though, of how much that would tear the country apart, right? I mean, I guess it all depends on what Mueller comes up with. If it's very
more so than now, though, Chris. I mean, serious.
I would think so. I would think so, because you would be essentially overturning the results of an election, right? I mean, if Mueller comes up with, you know, solid evidence of collusion, I think that's one thing. But if it's
that's what I'm saying.
If it's obstruction of justice or he lied, I don't know. It'll be a much tougher call. But the pressure, if Democrats take over the House, which everybody expects that they will, the pressure will certainly be on them to do it, because the base will want it really, really badly.
As JP once taught me to say, I hear you.
I hear you. I don't agree with you, but I hear you.
I hear you.
One of the things about this House Freedom Caucus of the Conservatives pushing this impeachment line is it's a reminder to me how Trump has normalized attacking the basic infrastructure of a rule of law, you know, the Justice Department, the National Security folks, and whatever. So he's been doing that for a long time. And so it really, if you step back in a different environment, the members of Congress attacking the Justice Department like this would be so outside the bounds of norms of our country, you know. But because we've had 2 years now of steady attacks by Trump on the Justice Department, it's no longer shocking, and I think that's a problem. I don't agree with a lot of what I don't agree with everything that Comey said, but I do think that he and others who are warning about the dangers of attacking the infrastructure that, you know, maintains our basic rule of law is dangerous for the fundamentals of our democracy.
I think your point about the norms is really very well taken, Teresa. He has, you know, it's one thing to break laws. It's another thing to deal with the norms of the country, in which case he says, that's too bad. A norm is not a law. I can do whatever I want. That's what he does.
When when you think about next steps here, so on Rosenstein, probably nothing will happen, right, on this case. But
it's
also
a political move.
But it's a political move. But does it, but to Alan's question earlier about, does this in any way give Tip a hand as to what they're thinking would be? Would they do this if they knew the president was going to fire Mueller?
It's an interesting question.
Well, on the president firing Mueller, the way that President Trump, in our experience and our observations, how he makes decisions is he doesn't deliberate and consider and create a plan. He makes decisions snap of the finger based on emotion and instinct. And so if he was going to fire Mueller, I think he would fire him. I don't think that he would have a long-term plan to let this guy dig up all this dirt on him and create a big document, and then fire him. That seems like would be a tough plan. Why would he execute that plan?
He can't fire Mueller, technically, right? So Rosenstein would have to fire Mueller.
Okay, but
so I think that what this is doing is trying to, you know, in the Fox and Friends world, in the, you know, the world of Trump supporters, demonize Rosenstein so that if he does have to fire Rosenstein, or if, you know, he feels compelled to do that. So what he would have to do is fire Rosenstein and put somebody in there who would then agree to fire Mueller.
Right. So why would he wait all this time to do it and let this guy?
I don't think he's going to fire Mueller.
Spend 16 months creating all these documents of everything bad that he's done.
I've always thought that that's just a narrative that helps keep churning the base and distracting from attention from what he does. I think the more they can sully these folks up, it just distracts from the things that he's doing and distracts from the issues that they're not dealing with. You know, the immigration issues that they're not dealing with. There's a whole host of, things.
Well, I hear you, Teresa. See? That's why you told me that, JP, right?
Data privacy.
Thank you. I hear you. However, what happens when you see a cornered rat in the corner of the room? Don't put your hand out, because you're going to get bitten. I think JP's point about planning, or was it Chris, is really well taken, except that when he's a cornered person in that corner of the room and he puts his hand out, he'll fire, he'll do whatever he can to stay alive. That's my view.
I agree with you.
But to JP's point, I mean, I hear you, Alan, but to JP's point...
We do this all day.
I know. I hope we do. Yeah. That's great.
He has to know. He knows what there is to find. So why would he give Mueller all this time to find it? You know what I mean? I mean, if he knows that there's stuff to be found, he would have. It seems to me that he would have put an end to this a lot earlier than now.
It also seems that the Cohen raid of Cohen's office spooked him much more than what's been going on.
That's true.
Because that gets to his personal. Yeah. It's like the Deutsche Bank is a line you shall not cross, I think, because it gets to his business dealings.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have much more to talk about. We will do so, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. I haven't seen any new ones.
That doesn't
Is
mean
this it? Is this it? I can't believe that. All right. Well, let's go on to some other stuff then, and we'll await the flood of letters that I'm sure we will get. Now, we'll go to the story about tariffs. Trump delays steel and aluminum tariffs for Canada, Mexico, and European and the EU, pulling back on major trade threat. I remember distinctly on this program somebody predicting that would happen. I have no idea who it was on the panel who predicted that would happen, but take credit for it.
Remind me about the prediction again.
That the president would delay the steel and aluminum tariffs for Canada, Mexico, and the EU.
Wasn't me.
All right. May have been Aaron. I'm not positive. But someone...
Aaron, New York City?
Yes. Aaron Pasitti. So somebody made that prediction. Anyway, the president has indeed done this. He at the last minute on Monday evening announced that he would again postpone imposing tariffs on steel and aluminum imports from Canada, Mexico, and the EU, pushing off a key economic decision while he tries to prod foreign leaders into making trade-related concessions. The White House said It reached agreements on metals imports with Argentina, Australia, and Brazil, saying more details will be finalized in 30 days. The contours of those agreements could be immediately learned, though the White House had been pushing other nations to agree to quotas on exports to the United States. Trump has put off a decision on steel and aluminum tariffs aimed at Mexico and Canada because he's trying to gain more access for U.S. businesses to their markets as part of a North American Free Trade Agreement renegotiation. This from the Washington Post.
Well, we do know that he thinks that he's the whole game. And he is playing with each of these actors as if he was doing the art of the deal. That, of course, is very dangerous because what happens is it's like the old Al Cap thing with the shmoo. If you put your hand on one part of it, it blows up in the other in the other part.
Yeah.
Shmoo. That was what he called them.
I love shmoo.
Yeah, shmoo.
Yeah.
And because everybody in this room except me doesn't remember Al Cap and Little Abner that well, right?
Not that well.
That's what I thought.
I hear you.
Part of being old.
It was a big white thing, and it sort of like a big round body, and then sort of thing came up.
But if you press one part of it,
Then it would move out.
That's right. Yeah. And I think what's happened here
like
is is the same thing. This guy, it's like playing three-dimensional chess with all of these actors, but he's not that smart. He can't really do it, and he doesn't. And he's really subjected to making mistakes, you know, in a case like this. We got some letters. You want to hear them?
Sure. Well, does anybody have anything else on this particular issue?
I would just like to hear from any of the listeners whose businesses, livelihood might be affected by these tariffs by the uncertainty.
I'm in a business that's being affected by a tariff that
because
just went into
paper.
Yeah, the newspaper industry is struggling with a 35% tariff on newsprint that Trump imposed.
And, I'll show you.
You know, it's raising the cost of doing business for the industry, and it's already leading to some layoffs. So tariffs can be dangerous.
It's also an interesting debate because it basically has Charles Schumer on Trump's side on the tariff issue and Paul Ryan against Trump on the tariff issue. So there are some interesting bed partners in the tariff debate.
What do you know that we don't know?
They're just, it's interesting.
But also,
yeah, that's
aren't
true.
They different?
There are people on the left who are very, Bernie Sanders, I think, is a tariff guy. I mean, it isn't a simple, you know, Republican left-right issue. There are a lot of cross currents.
But right. Also, there's issue difference in view between what he's doing with the Chinese because of the imbalance of trade there versus blowing up NAFTA versus what he's doing with the EU, because with the EU they want to negotiate with different countries independently, but that's not how the EU works, and there are allies, and why is he hurting our allies? Why, for instance, is they're hurting Japan of all people, you know, countries that they've negotiated an agreement with South Korea, but they're holding a hard line against the Japanese, which I'm just not even understand the politics of that. So it seems that they're a whole host of different, I don't know, is Schumer opposed to everything? I mean, supportive of everything or just the China trade hard line on China? I don't know.
Go ahead. I was just going to say to a lot of conservatives, you know, tariffs are heresy. You know, they're the epitome of everything that, you know, centralized control and the anti-free market impulses.
Sure. That's right.
All right. Letters.
Okay. John says, Mueller investigation. I think at this point that the Mueller investigation is less about finding evidence of wrongdoing and more about giving liberals someone to blame for losing in 2016 aside from themselves. Over the last decade, the mainstream media has gone from ignoring the white working class to treating them with outright hostility. The way the advent of automation, illegal immigration, and identity politics is discussed in the news may have something to do with why they turned to Trump. So wait a second, John. So what you're saying is, when you say, I think that at this point the Mueller investigation is less about finding evidence, you think that Republican Mueller who had been the head of the FBI, who was appointed by a Republican, and who has superb credentials, better than anybody that they could have found. You think he's in on this conspiracy?
Yeah, I think I agree with everything in that. I'd have to hear it again, but I think I agree with everything except the first sentence. I mean, I think there's a lot of truth in there, but I don't think Mueller has anything to do with any of that, or I don't think Mueller is trying to muddy the waters. I think he's trying to conduct an investigation.
I hear you.
And the top Justice Department people are also Republican appointees. Or Trump appointees, I mean.
Keith says, Rudy is a bad person. Good morning, panel. Your weekly reminder that...
That was my favorite book growing up as a kid. Rudy was a bad person.
Good morning, panel. Your weekly reminder that Rudy Giuliani is a bad person, comma, Rudy leaked these types of things when he was a federal prosecutor, mayor, and campaign advisor. No coincidence that Rudy shows up, and a week later, these questions were leaked to a news organization based out of New York City, the New York Times. That's quite a news
organization. Still want to know the outcome of the investigation of James Kallstrom and Rudy Giuliani. Just before the Comey made his public statement to reopen the case against Hillary Clinton. Remember, just the end of the election. What did he know, and when did he know it, and how did he know?
Right.
All right. And now we hear from Brucey. If Trump is in a questioning session with Mueller, Hi, panel. If Trump is in a questioning session with Mueller, and Mueller asks a follow-up question that Trump doesn't like, can't, and won't, Trump just end the session? I'm having trouble visualizing how all this plays out with such a human tornado as Trump. Well, if he gets up and walks out of the room, it's a statement in itself.
Mm-hmm.
So, best I can do, Bruce. And Michael in Rexford says, teachers protesting for better pay seems to me to be a red state phenomena. I haven't heard anyone in media associate the protest with the red states, however. Please comment.
Say that again? I didn't understand.
In other words, the teachers who are going out on strike are badly paid. They're in terrible places, and they're almost universally from red states.
Conservative, Republican-led states. I think this is a huge underreported phenomenon.
Well, we were talking during the break that New York teachers are pretty well paid for the most part. I mean, they wouldn't have, they're not laboring under the same conditions that, West Virginia.
So you think that blue states...
I don't know about every blue state. I mean, I guess you'd have to go state by state, but generally speaking, I would think it's safe to say that bluer, higher tax states probably pay their teachers better.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But it's interesting that they're feeling empowered to go out and take a stand like this when they hadn't before. You see it West Virginia, Kentucky, now Oklahoma, Arizona, and on. I think that this is a real movement, and they're protesting not just for their own raises, but for more funding for their classrooms. And they're getting the pictures out of Arizona yesterday around the state capitol, the thousands and thousands of teachers, 30,000, I don't know the exact number, was astounding.
Yeah, well, it may not be so much empowered as desperate, right? I mean, there's a difference between empowered and desperate. At some point, you get so desperate, you say, you throw caution to the winds and you say, okay, I'm going to go out there, we're going to do it. And once, by the way, it's like the Arab Spring. Once it begins, then everybody else picks it up.
It's really lit a fire around the country among the teachers.
Also, one of my favorite jokes from the White House Correspondents' Dinner, she said, we'd love to give the teachers a gun so they can sell it and buy supplies for the kids. I thought that was a great joke.
I agree with you. I thought that one was...
And Bonnie says, DOJ... Please comment on the changes Rosenstein just made to the manual for U.S. attorneys regarding the press and gerrymandering vis-a-vis race. And that's Bonnie from Woodstock.
I don't know about race, but he did about the press.
He took out
a section. Yeah, I don't know.
There's a section taken out of the...
About the freedom of the press, but I didn't know about race. I can look it up.
Well...
Anyways. All right, we'll get back.
I don't know anything about it.
We'll do homework and we'll get back to you.
I don't know anything about it either. Chris says...
Feel free to Google it yourself, sir.
What?
No, I was telling the listener they could also Google it and find out.
Yeah. Chris says, tear the country apart? Dear panel, I move to tears that impeachment is now being talked about as a real possibility. Will it tear the country apart? No, on the contrary, it's the beginning of a healing process. Chris. Okay. I'm for. I think if he broke the law and it's clear, he should be impeached. And I'm not worrying about whether Nancy Pelosi comes out and says this is a bad idea.
I just don't think that there's any way that removing a president, any president from office, is going to be just something that just happens and we all just whistle down the street and just everybody's happy. I think that would be incredibly controversial. I think, you know, you look back at the 90s.
Look back at the 60s, 70s. Look at.
Well, I was thinking about the impeachment of Clinton.
And how about the impeachment of Nixon? I mean, which really did lead to a sort of permanent schism with the Republicans and the Democrats. It is said they never forgot it. It was always at the top of their list. And in fact, the Clinton impeachment you're referencing was often seen as a get even for Nixon.
Hmm. Did the Republicans, though, at some point turn against Nixon, and that's when he knew it was over?
Yes.
So I think if that were to happen with
right.
Trump, if an overwhelming majority of Republican, both elected officials and voters, said, or the consensus was it's time for him to go, I think that would be different than what Chris is talking about, which would be more in the Clinton, where they feel like it's a little bit more of a potential.
It depends on what's in Mueller's report, right? If it is so damning that Republicans turn against the president, then yeah, that's a different situation. But I think he would resign. I don't think it would be an impeachment situation.
All right, let's hold there. We will be back in a few moments to tackle more subjects and talk about other stuff. In the meantime, we have the lighting set. It is beautiful. It's a clean, well-lit place for news. We'll go over to Ray Graff next after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. 6 minutes past 10 o'clock. Alan Chartok is here. J.P. Miller, Chris Churchill, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your input. Panel at WAMC.org. We have a few letters, then we'll move on to some other stuff.
Thanks, Joe. Trump won't fire Mueller, says Robert, because he doesn't believe that Mueller can best him, regardless of what evidence Mueller turns up. This delusion of omnipotence is reflected in Trump's statement that he wants to sit down for an interview with Mueller and is doubling down on statements that are probably false, even as his lawyers beg him to shut up. And that's from Bob in Albany.
Just because Trump says he wants to sit down with Mueller doesn't mean he really wants to.
That's right.
Trump also said he wants to get rid of the Electoral College, and of course we know that he really doesn't want to.
He's a well-known liar. Richard says, tariffs. Panel, it appears to me that, quote, big labor, a traditional Democratic Party constituency, is very pro-tariff. And Democratic presidents, at least since Bill Clinton, have done very little for, quote, big labor. And that's from Richard.
All right. I think there's truth to that. I think that's partly why you saw states like Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Michigan turn red, right? Mm-hmm. Part of it is residual anger over NAFTA and these kind of neoliberal economic policies that a lot of Democrats are upset about and a lot of blue-collar people are upset about. Mm.
All right, I want to get to this next story because it gives me an opportunity to say the word subterfuge. Israel says secret files detail Iran's nuclear subterfuge.
Can I just apologize for a moment for interchanging the word impotence for omnipotence in the letter, that previous letter?
How did I not notice that?
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Revealing a huge archive of stolen Iranian nuclear plans, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel accused Iran on Monday of lying for years about its efforts to build a nuclear weapon, days before President Trump was to decide whether to pull out of the 2015 nuclear deal with Iran. Mr. Netanyahu presented records from a secret warehouse in Tehran, making the case that Iranian leaders had deceived the International Nuclear Agency when they insisted their nuclear program was for peaceful purposes. Israeli spies seized the documents in an overnight raid in January, according to a senior Israeli official. Mr. Netanyahu did not provide any evidence that Iran had violated the nuclear agreement since it took effect in early 2016. That suggests that the Israeli prime minister, who has opposed the deal since its inception and even went to the American Congress, to try to stop it, was hoping that the disclosures would bolster Mr. Trump's resolve to scuttle the agreement on May 12th. doing so may be one of the most momentous foreign policy decisions of Mr. Trump's time in office. All right, so a lot to unpack there, but let us begin with Mr. Netanyahu.
Well, there's not a lot to really understand here. We know that the Iranians and the Ayatollahs have been trying to export as much problem for the Israelis as they possibly can. And so the Israelis come back and they say they do what they can to pull the rug out from under the Iranians. It really doesn't go much further than that, except for the fact that Trump has certainly signed on with the Israeli philosophy of what's going on. And we have a new Secretary of State who's saying, quote, the Israelis have the right to defend themselves. So that tells you where Trump is in all of this.
Well, I think that Netanyahu was lobbying in a way, right?
Oh, I mean, yeah.
We saw the French president in Washington. Was it last week or was it 2 weeks ago?
Last week.
He was here, and you can presume that he was lobbying Trump to stay in the Iranian deal. And this is, I guess, Netanyahu's way of trying to counter that a little bit. I don't doubt that anything that Netanyahu said yesterday was inaccurate. I'm sure that Iran was lying and cheating. But that's probably a different question whether the deal, you know, we should stay in the deal going forward.
Right, Chris. And the narrative has been from every commentator that I've heard is that we knew that when we signed.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we knew they were lying about the past and we didn't care because the whole issue, as you just say, is moving forward.
Wow. That brought silence to the room. I thought you were going to say something.
Israel,
we all
obviously.
Hear Alan. I'll hear Alan and we all agree.
Israel has a huge motivation to defend themselves, and Iran signed what many see was a bad deal for us, and they plan to build bombs. They didn't find bomb-making materials, but they found plans. They didn't destroy the plans, and I don't know whether they promised to destroy the plans or not.
And what about that Mossad, you know, getting this material? You know, he stood up in front of it. He showed you all the CDs. He showed you all of the stuff. That's incredible. That's just incredible. I don't know that we have any assets like that who could do that.
Teresa?
But I thought the experts came out after and said that that's old news. It's information that was,
exactly.
You know, that this is not new news. This is old news.
Right.
And that I think a lot of people do think that the deal is a good deal. The best of what one could get, and to renege on the deal would be both bad for the region and bad for the negotiations that are going on regarding North and South Korea.
So what's your prediction?
I thought the most interesting thing, well, the thing that happened with the White House statement I want to get to, because I think that that's, stunning in its ineptitude and dangerous, that they put out a statement. They said the United States is aware of the information just released by Israel and continues to examine it carefully. This information provides new and compelling details about Iran's efforts to develop missile-deliverable nuclear weapons. Well, the experts came back and said, no, it's not new. This is not information we didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
But the next part is the part that it was a problem. These facts are consistent with what the United States has long known. Iran has a robust clandestine nuclear weapons program, and it goes on to talk about it. Well, they had to go back and reissue this statement late last night because it was causing such a problem, because, in fact, the right word is Iran had a robust and clandestine nuclear weapons program, but it no longer has one. And so they had to reissue this statement last night.
So what's your prediction? What's Trump going to do?
He's going to get out of the deal because then he's got it set up. And then the 2 days later, he goes May 12th, he gets out of the deal. And May 14th, they go celebrate the opening of the new embassy.
I definitely hear you. I agree with you, your analysis.
All right. A couple of other things that we are going to talk about in our next in our final 10 minutes here. Let's go back to our good friend Ronny Jackson for a moment. So according to CNN, Pence's doctor alerted White House aides about Ronny Jackson concerns last fall. The physician for Mike Pence privately raised alarms within the White House last fall that President Donald Trump's doctor may have violated federal privacy protections for a key patient, Pence's wife, Karen, and intimidated the vice president's doctor during angry confrontations over the episode. The previously unreported incident is the first sign that serious concerns about Ronnie Jackson's conduct had reached the highest levels of the White House as far back as September, months before White House aides furiously defended Jackson's professionalism, insisted that he had been thoroughly vetted, and argued allegations of misconduct amounted to unsubstantiated rumors. The episode, detailed in three memos by Pence's physician, is also the first documentation that has surfaced involving a special allegation of medical misconduct by Jackson. It adds to a series of significant allegations leveled by an unidentified current and former group of colleagues, including that he casually dispensed prescription drugs.
Added to this is the very, very interesting news, right, that he ain't going back to his old job.
He will not be returning, that he will not be the candy man in the White House anymore.
Well, you know, let's all remember that Mike Pence is a man who does not like to be in a room alone with a woman, alone, unescorted, without a docent, whatever that's called. Here comes Mrs. Pence complaining that she was treated badly, right, if I get this right, by the doctor. And all of that is mixing around in my head. I don't know what it all means, but seems to me there must be something going on.
Well, I mean, if there's concerns about the doctor, and the Pence's personal physician is saying, is getting into an argument with this, and then Pence is bringing it forward, you assume something's going on, right? I mean, that there's concern.
It's all just really bizarre. I don't know.
Privacy is one issue. The violence is the other issue, or the confrontation.
I mean, maybe nobody listens to Pence. Maybe that's the moral
which
of the story.
Which is so interesting, because when you say that, Pence is silent, but not on this. So in other words, I don't know about anybody else out there or anybody in the room, but when your mate is treated unfairly, all of a sudden everything else sort of goes out the window. You stop doing your professional job, and your emotion of protection comes into your chest.
And then the harm of all of this is not just to the individuals in the White House under his care, but now it boils over to our veterans all around the country, because improper vetting, Trump just, on a whim, picks this guy to be his nominee, and obviously was not vetted in even a cursory way, right? And so now you have this opening at the VA at a time when they need to continue making progress and improving the VA for our soldiers, those we should be caring about so much.
But this is also a doctor who got a glowing recommendation from President Obama, too. So
and President Bush.
Yeah, so it's confusing. It's one of those things where it's hard to know who to believe exactly. I mean,
but as I said about this last week, in terms of him being nominated to head the VA, even if all those accusations against him about dispensing pills and interacting inappropriately with patients and others, if you put him in a box and put him aside and say, okay, maybe they're true, maybe they're not true, he still was not qualified to run the VA.
I agree with you.
He does not have the skill set, and it's too important an agency. He does not have the skill set to run the VA.
That's the issue.
And also a big campaign promise. You remember him on stage saying, we're going to take care of our veterans. That was a key message of his over and over. We're going to take care of our veterans. We're going to take care of our veterans. And by him nominating this person, had the confirmation gone through and those
best people
issues were set aside, I think it would put him at risk of serious criticism, saying, well, how do you put a guy who is not an administrator ahead of one of the biggest federal agencies around that takes care of who you say is our most precious asset, which are our veterans?
Right. And this vetting is a systemic problem for them. You just saw yesterday with the nominee for the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement for ICE. He's been pending for a long time and just withdrew and is retiring all of a sudden. He nominated him. He was in an acting position. He was in there for so long, they had to give him a separate title in the but never sent his papers up to, for the review. And when the Democrats were asking for more information, pressing for more information last week, all of a sudden then he announces his retirement. This is the ICE folks, you know, where he says, I'm going to be so hard on immigration. I'm going to be tough. I'm going to be great. I'm going to be great with the veterans. I'm going to be great on immigration. And, you know, all of these different positions are not properly filled. It's the basic mechanisms of governing that they're not doing.
We have about 5 minutes left. We have a couple of letters, and we'll go to our final topic.
Betsy says, hi, panel. The Justice Department sadly changed rules around gerrymandering and race. They reportedly erased language related to racial gerrymandering widely reported. I just want to remind everybody on the gerrymandering issue. The gerrymandering has never been seen by the court as a place that they should be up to now. We think that that may change now. But they have always said if it was done specifically for racial purposes to exclude people, that that did count. And the court has gotten involved in that. And so if the Justice Department is now saying we're not going to do that anymore, we're going to take that one exception away, it tells you a lot about what's really going on. Okay?
Yep, the handbook. I did check that the handbook no longer specifically mentions racial gerrymandering.
Right. Okay. Reed says it's Mueller time. Contrary to one of the last letters, the special counsel seems to be working to provide indisputable evidence of the president's criminal acts. This will be for the benefit of the 30% of the country that haven't been and may never be convinced by the overwhelming amount of circumstantial evidence available up to this point. I think that's a right, Reed. I think you write a very important letter there. He's got to be seeing this group of people in terms of tearing this nation asunder as being extremely important and need to be convinced. You know, I've often thought that the one thing that really got Nixon were the tapes. You know, after the tapes, there was no arguing. Is there a similar smoking gun here to the tapes that faced Nixon?
Just a reminder, I just was reminded this is the anniversary of when Nixon fired Dean and then accepted the resignations of Haldeman and Ehrlichman.
Well, I have to say, when I watch John Dean on CNN as one of the commentators, I think it is CNN,
yeah.
As one of the commentators, it's incredibly impressive.
So final story, we only have a couple of moments, but so if your boss is recommending you for another job, how worried should you be? So if you're Kathy Hochul, and Governor Cuomo says, my God, you are so good, you should run for Congress, how does that make you feel about your place on the ticket?
Well, there are a couple of things.
Yes.
And we have some real good experts here on this issue, JP.
And then the ultimate question is, could she beat Chris Collins?
No, the answer is he beat her.
Yeah.
So why would she go back into that again? And it happens to be, I know this is going to sound awful for me, but it happens to be a lousy job. You got to get on that plane every Monday, and you got to go down there, and you got to talk to a bunch of people that quite often you really think, oh, my God, this is not what I want to be doing with my time. And so you do all of that. And also that Cuomo has had a history of getting rid of lieutenant governors. It was only one, but one left. And we don't know if he quit or whether he was pushed.
But why? I don't really understand why he would want to get rid of her at this point. I mean, doesn't she help his ticket?
No. And the answer to that is there is an African-American candidate from Brooklyn who is running. And there's an old saying about winning primaries. Primaries are not won out of the five boroughs of New York City. So now you have an African-American who is leading, of course, to the Nixonian, in this case, sorry to use that word, narrative, that this guy is not a progressive. So he picks a woman, and by the way, she's been here, and she's very articulate and very bright, who doesn't meet his political needs.
This story right now at the state level, most people would think the Cynthia Nixon story is the biggest story. This Kathy Hochul story is what I think most people in Albany are talking about right now. There was a report in the Buffalo News over the last 2 days by Tom Precious that has really gone into what the people in Cuomo's office are saying and what Kathy Hochul's saying outwardly, and it's clear to most observers that they're not trying to push her out, but they're saying, if you go, it's okay.
That sounds to me like they're trying to push her out.
But it is part of the Cynthia Nixon story, right? I mean, it's part of the great Cynthia Nixon freakout that, you know, Cuomo's is doing, like, all of a sudden, ever since she got into the race, he's just, his hair is on fire. He's announcing things.
His pants are on fire.
Pants and his hair. He's just, you know, he's throwing everything he can to get it to stick to the wall, just to, you know, to do what he can to douse this I'm mixing too many metaphors here. douse this fire. But,
all right, 30 seconds. Go ahead.
I just, why would taking a woman off the ticket help in that regard? I don't understand.
Because it's not New York City. New York City is where the Democratic voters are. And there's an African-American who is running for lieutenant governor and who could well beat her in a primary.
And presumably
He would be saddled, right, with a lieutenant governor. It happened to Papa Cuomo, who got saddled with Al Dolbello.
And Nixon would presumably be strongest in the city, and that's where she could steal most of his votes.
Yeah.
And team up with Giumani, who has also been endorsed by the Working Families Party.
All right. Interesting stuff. We'll talk more about it, obviously, as time turns on. My thanks to Teresa Bourgeois, Chris Churchill, J.B. Miller, and Alan Chartok. We'll be back after this.